I think it's a love story. It's a love story between humans, between different species, between, you know, all dwellings and buildings. At the end of the day, it is trying to create a different narrative of how we perceive these animals and how we interact with them.
Welcome to Season 2 of India Books Podcast. India Book is a podcast that uses literature as a lever to bring up multiple fields of India. This is a perfect podcast for you if you're a bibliophile looking for your next read, or if you're a trivia junkie simply interested in learning more about things. It's also perfect for you if you're just interested in learning more about India as a nation. Every episode focuses on a different theme and takes place via a conversation between the host and the celebratory author that we have on the show. I am Ayushi Mona, your host on India Book.
Iridescent Skin is the first of its kind multi-species ethnography on humans and white sharks. It's based on the fieldwork that marine anthropologist and author Professor Aich and his friend Susan Lucas did as they went in the search of the elusive and the mystified great white sharks. This is not a shark book. It's not merely an academic book. It's an exploration of shark behavior, ecology, including how shark attacks have affected people in the Sundarbans in India. Listen to this episode of the India Booked to know about how the personal, social, historical, ecological, and perceptual landscape is entangled together. Hello everyone, I'm Ayushi Mona and you're listening to India Booked, a podcast where we lean into the idea of India and interesting work done by Indian authors. Today I am specially thrilled to have with me Raj Shekhar. Raj Shekhar has a PhD in Marine Anthropology and Applied Psychology. He's also recently been awarded professorship at the Sister Nivedita University. His research focus is in the field of holistic study of cultural and natural scapes shaped by physical and symbolic interactions of humans with marine environment and life forms. And if that bio intimidates you, do not worry, because in very, very simple terms, Raj Shekhar has written a book about white sharks and caged humans called Iridescent Skin. And that is what we're going to be talking about with him today. Raj Shekhar, welcome to the podcast and thank you for taking our time for this.
Yeah, actually, good morning. God, that bio even makes me, you know, a little intimidated. So I don't think we need to worry about that. It's been a privilege to have done this research. And, you know, thank you for this opportunity for being here. I look forward to having a great discussion with you.
So, Raj Shekhar, while a lot of academicians typically, you know, restrict their work around the field of study, very few actually want to take it in a more accessible form to the masses. And what really made you decide that, yes, I've done this, but it also needs to be told at large, because you've spent 7 years, I think, of your life committed to this book.
Aisha, I think that's, you know, such an important question. Incidentally, I was thinking of that, when I was quite literally, you know, half a feet underwater in the sub-Antarctic, and, you know, there were 18-foot great white sharks around me. And I was thinking, you know, this sensation I have, it cannot be expressed by mere, you know, academic jargons, and it has to be expressed through more artistic, more open discourse, and it has to reach people, you know, not just academician, it has to reach anyone who's interested in the marine environment, anyone who's interested, you know, in adventure, or at the end of the day, you know, search of their own selves through the vision of the magnanimous world and the environment and, you know, and marine world around them. So that's why, you know, I wrote it.
That's so interesting. Another question, you know, that I think that everyone must have asked you when they probably see the cover of the book. And the book is absolutely beautiful. To everyone listening to this podcast, you have to see the book. It's a beautiful hardbound edition with absolutely lovely images taken by, you know, Raj Shekhar. And, you know, I think some of the images have also been taken by Susan Lucas, right, Raj?
Taken by Susan. Yeah. Primarily me. Some of them were by Susan.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful imagery. And that, after a very long time, did I also read a book which was visual and where the visual really supplemented what I was reading, because it was otherwise impossible to really imagine a lot of these things. I wanted to understand that, you know, when people see this book, how often do you get a question saying that, hey, is this like Jaws? Or very, again, because it's something that's going out to the masses and not for specialists within your domain, do instinctively questions pop up where people think, oh, this is a shark book. And it's very actually, and the way you've written it, and once people on the podcast listen to it, they'll know what I'm saying, that it's actually a celebration and an ode to life. But do you often get shark book, Jaws, Steven Spielberg sort of references?
Yeah. I mean, interestingly enough, it's been 40 years and we still haven't got out of, you know, what I call the Jaws era. I think we are almost out. We're in the post-Jaws era right now. But yeah, you know, that image had such a profound effect on not just how we perceive these animals, but, you know, the entirely, you know, on their conservation. So we are trying to come out of that, but it's still there. And not only communities, you know, which don't have relationship with, you know, big fish like sharks, but also, you know, communities which have been going in the water for decades has a severe effect, you know, when Jaws actually came out, and it's still there. I think that was one of the premise of this book, that how can we go beyond that image? You know, what can we do? And I think that's why my narrative was, you know, at the end of the day, the best way I explain it, I think it's a love story. It's a love story between humans, between different species, between, you know, old dwellings and buildings. At the end of the day, it is trying to create a different narrative of how we perceive these animals and how we interact with them.
So one of the most interesting things, right? One of my favorite chapters was actually Social Science of a Big Biting Fish. And I found this very interesting that the fact that sharks were extremely hard to study, even in biological sciences. And you've quoted and said, right, that there are several factors that make them difficult to study. They're fast moving, they're far ranging, vast marine environment, and, you know, a lot of technology for studying such free roaming aquatic animals did not exist. So Raj, I know you probably get this a lot of time in social situations, but how did you decide that this is what you were going to do, or how did life play out for you that you actually became, I think, India's only shark anthropologist, and maybe there are a couple of people the world over who do what you do. So how did life sort of take you on this course?
All right. So fair enough. The thing is, you'll be surprised how much people are intimidated to ask these questions, but the reality is I am not India's only shark scientist. Just to be clear, there are many, talented, hardworking scientists who've been working with sharks and, on sharks for decades, and younger scientists who are also coming up, but primarily, they are, you know, ecologists and biologists. What I am, I'm a transdisciplinary human shark researcher, which means, you know, I'm hoping to bring in biological sciences as much as social sciences and art, for that matter, to do human shark research. And my research is, you know, understandably not just about sharks in India, but, you know, sharks in New Zealand. It's a global discourse of shark image creation, you know, their how can we, you know, support their conservation efforts? How can we support new ways of, you know, teaching, you know, shark research? As a matter of fact, I have just created, you know, a new disciplinary paradigm where I'm trying to create a new perspective of, you know, teaching human shark research. But yeah, you know, me coming into shark research was when I was trying to do my second PhD in anthropology. And I went to New Zealand initially. Yeah, you know, the plan was to do a research on human-elephant interaction, but that didn't work out. And, you know, one day, you know, me and my, you know, friend Susan, we went to dive with white sharks. And at the end of the day, I was always obsessed with sharks. And I, you know, at the heart of my heart, I had maybe someday, you know, when I learn, you know, from anthropological perspective of human-elephant interaction, maybe I can use that in human-shark research. But when we went to do the dive and when, you know, my other plan was not working, I just realized, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. But it was tricky because at that time, you know, no one was talking about it. No one had done anything basically around this. So, yeah, you know, I just had to find my way. But there was a lot of support I got from my friends, you know, like Susan, who's not only my research assistant, but an integral part of this book. You know, and my expeditions and my other friends, my colleagues who supported me all the way. So, yeah, no mountain is climbed by just oneself. It's obviously a group effort.
But that still doesn't tell me, how did you become interested in becoming an anthropologist in this area? I'm just very curious because there are there are such few people who do interesting things the way you've done them and actually written about them beautifully for others to experience, like just your book where you talk about you know, these myriad intersections, right? For instance, how legislation for animal conservation can get shaped by personal experiences, and how that also is, say, an influence on environmental attitude that you've quoted, or direct experience has positive effect in creation of environmental values, which is probably why we see, you know, people, I mean, for instance, nobody talks about dolphins and blue whales the way they do about white sharks.
Exactly. You know, but that's precisely the thing, right? I don't know. You know what? You know, I've been asking this question all my life. What made me fascinated about sharks? I don't know. You know, when I was growing up, maybe there was something about them. You know, I wanted to imbibe their energy in me. You know, they were a muse to me for a long time in my life. You know, that it was almost, you know, visceral, emotional, sexual, you know, that energy I could feel from them. Maybe I wanted to imbibe them in me, you know, as I was then, you know, further in my life, like I said, they became my muse. I actually had an entire exhibition of paintings on sharks. They were always there in me, and for a lack of a better words, I was there, you know, in them. But now when I write, you know, in my art, in my, you know, scientific investigation, I think sharks have actually become my own language. Through sharks, I express my art as much as I express my you know, scholarly exercises, as, you know, my happiness, my sadness, you know, my love, my passion. I think through the language of sharks, that's where I'm most comfortable. It's very ethereal.
That's so wonderful. And I think a large part of the book also talks about it, right? Because one of the first things that, and you say this upfront in the introduction for readers listening to the podcast, that you have been objective about cage diving, right? Because that's an essential part of the narrative. And things like, the fact that, you know, this whole commercial practice and commercialization of taking tourists to do cage diving with sharks has received a lot of attention in the last like 20 years or so, because cage diving has now, I mean, it gets practiced with like bull sharks, you know, blue sharks, a bunch of, yeah, these other
different
species that you, yeah. But obviously the most popular form of commercial diving is with great white sharks. And one of the most interesting things that I found in the book was that, you know, you say that for experts, it's actually a gentleman called Rodney Fox. And for people listening to the podcast who may not know, he's also known as the father of white shark cage diving. He says that it's better to respect through understanding then kill out of fear, which was actually one of my favorite lines from the book as well.
Yeah. Rodney Fox incidentally had the most, one of the most, you know, highly recorded and, you know, well-known white shark attack incident, you know, a big, well, let's say bite, not attack, because attack has its own political tonation. So, there was this big white shark which took, you know, had a hold of his entire torso, and there are very, very famous images of that. So Fox actually created the essentially in the white shark cage diving industry, and he was the team who actually took out Ron and Ballard Taylor when they were shooting for Jaws, incidentally, you know, 40 years back for Spielberg.
Raj, another thing that I found very interesting, right? Of course, while a large part of this book is obviously based around New Zealand, right? There is a significant part of your own work that's centered around India. And of course, the book tells us very interesting things about you, that when you acted, you were apparently the lead of a daily soap in Calcutta. And you did a bunch of these very interesting things. So why don't you, I mean, just connecting to the India side of things,
Pichle Janam, so let's not even dwell into that.
I will not ask you more than this, but I do definitely want to ask you questions on the ecosystem of conservation in India, right? And how, you know, your work across two ecosystems as different as India and New Zealand have evolved.
Yeah. I mean, Ashi, I don't think I'm qualified to talk about Indian ecosystem, because like I said, there are a lot of highly qualified scientists who work with, you know, Indian sharks and marine ecosystem. You know, thankfully they have been, you know, in touch with me, and I've, you know, have the privilege of talking with them. But one thing I will say, you know, it has been a privilege and probably, you know, one of my most significant contribution to human shark research was when I was able to be the first to document shark attacks in the Sundarban regions. And, you know, there has been historically sharks, you know, in the Ganges, as, you know, many of us know, and, you know, in the Ghats of Calcutta, there's a lot of shark attacks. And, you know, when I was growing up, there was this term I used to hear called Kamut. And, you know, I used to hear, you know, when my father and, you know, that their friends were, you know, diving, not diving, I mean, swimming, you know, in the Ganges, you know, a lot of the time they were scared out of the water because there was Kamut, and there's stories of Kamut taking people's legs and, you know, sometimes feeding on them. I didn't really know what Kamut was, but, you know, all the evidence I had basically was indicating that they might actually be sharks. So when I was in Sundarbans, I actually realized not only they are sharks, but, you know, there are hundreds of cases of shark attacks in the Sundarban, which has not been recorded by the international shark attack files or anything like that. And, you know, it has been a privilege of my life to record these bites and the effect and reasoning of these bites potentially. And, you know, how both the species, humans and sharks, are both, you know, united in the destruction, unfortunately, that's happening there. You know, both of them suffering from the anthropogenic effects, you know, of the 21st century. You know, fish who could have potentially been there for hundreds, thousands, if not millions of years, and human beings who also try to survive there. So incidentally, I just want to, you know, tell our listeners here that, you know, I'm trying to create a sustainable living for the women's of Sundarbans who have suffered these kind of, you know, shark bites, or have lost their partners from shark bites. And so, you know, if anyone wants to talk about it, please get in touch with me. So that has been such an eye-opening incident. And there are, you know, I have recorded 20-foot sharks in that region, you know, from fishes who have been there. But at the same time, you know, large fish, large sharks are not visible there anymore. So one might say, well, then the shark attack has decreased. That's great. But what has happened to these fish? You know, who were there all these years? And what has happened to the ecosystem? So, you know, all that needs to be answered.
True. And in fact, again, I think in the book, the chapter is Babu Ghat, right? You've documented and also said that, you know, a lot of times the challenge is not just the fact that somebody was bitten by the shark, but to continue to have a sustained living after, you know, after the incident, especially because Sundarbans is very poverty ridden. And these are things that, again, just don't really even come into the cognizance or awareness of, I mean, I can tell you personally, I never knew, for instance, that they were gangetic dolphins in the Sundarbans. I knew that because I read The Hungry Tide by Amitabh Ghosh. Till such time, I had no awareness. Of course, I knew about the Great Bengal Tiger. But aquatic life or marine life in the Sundarbans is obviously wholly underreported on, under-discussed. I mean, now it still comes up in conversations because of climate change and all the issues around Sundarbans. But still, conversations around how even that affects marine and aquatic life is far and fewer in between.
Yes. No, I mean, see, the one thing I found really interesting was so, you know, there are three major predators in the Sundarbans, right? Tigers, crocodiles, and sharks. Now, incidentally, you know, tigers and crocodiles are mentioned in folklore and art, but at least me personally, I did not find a single mention of sharks, either in folklore or in art or anything like that. So that was so astonishing to me, that why, you know, such a major predator is not, you know, in people's psyche, and let alone in the Sundarbans. That, you know, that's why it's easy to understand why, you know, no one even in Calcutta, like 60-70 kilometers from there, or the rest of the India, doesn't even know about these big sharks, potentially, you know, 10 to 12 foot sharks being in these waters. Incidentally, you know, so 2020, when I actually came back to India, I did a different puja. You know, Ganga Devi, right? So Ganga Devi has one of her animal totem as Makar. So Makar is a mythical creature. You know, it's half of it is like an elephant, and, you know, the rest of it is like a fish. So instead of having the Makar as the main, you know, representation of Ganga Devi, I made a shark, which was a representation of the Ganga Devi. And, you know, so we had a small puja there, and we invited all, you know, the women who suffered from shark bites themselves or lost their partners, and, you know, got some media, basically trying to bring some light to the plights of these women and the plight of the sharks, you know, who are there in these waters.
Also, I mean, there are these aspects, right, of... I mean, culture, and because you're an anthropologist, I think the erasure of or presence or again, and I mean, it sounds, I think, funny to me as I say this also, but the fact of like a Steven Spielberg, you know, capturing the great white shark in a particular way in a cinematic imagination has the same effect that the erasure of sharks from folklore as predators in Sundarbans do, right? Because one just erases memories of predators and then makes them lose out, right? Because then all conservation efforts begin to be around, say, tigers. And on the other hand, In the particular depiction of a character in a cinematic or a hyperreal imagination, as you so nicely put it earlier, takes the animal into another segment where do we want to conserve this threatening animal when there is anyway limited resources and you have to prioritize conservation of different species? Which I don't know, it's just a thought off my head. But how do you think the intersection of culture really influences this?
I'll try to be as brief as I can on this. That's precisely, these are fundamental questions that we need to ask. At the end of the day, unfortunately, the reality is conservation is often comes down to cultural aesthetics. As much as we would like to say it comes down to sciences, but it doesn't. And scientists are very aware of that. And that's why, images are such an important part. So that's precisely the reason, I'm creating my new discipline, which I call SHHRKS, or SHARCS, which basically is, shark human transdisciplinary, research perspective or system, where I'm trying to bring in natural sciences as much as social sciences and art to create a multi-species dimension where, we're bringing in the humans and sharks into one perspective of observation and seeing how these kind of perspective can be taught from the university level to knowledge creation, to finally being able to use the knowledge that is created in the community and make use of it in policy. So that's why, I'm trying to bring all these different strands together so that we actually have a real-time effect. Let's be clear. Sharks mean, you ask any, marine scientist, they'll tell you sharks, like, apex species like that, means a healthy ecosystem. If they are not there, we're all done. So, protecting them is not, we do because we have time or money. It's just necessity, just like, any other part of the ecosystem. And we have to do it. And for whatever reason, it's not working. The last 70 years, last 30 odd years, there is some data to show that 70% of the large, sharks are gone out of the oceans. So we are running out of time. Again, some data is showing that we have about 3,500, large white sharks in the ocean. I don't know how true this is because no one really knows, honestly. But even if, even let's say that is true, we are running out of time. Action has to be taken now. Action has to be taken that where they are demystified and, where we talk about them. See, at the end of the day, all of this reminds me of, Dostoevsky's saying, right? That beauty will save the world. That at the end, only knowledge, objective knowledge by itself does not change the world. If that did, certain things that has happened in the last 5 years wouldn't have happened globally. That's why we need to connect with our communities. We need to connect with the stories and change the image of the sharks so that people want to conserve them.
Absolutely. I think, Rajshekhar, on that note, I would actually just like to reiterate that everyone should read this book. Do not be intimidated if you're somebody who reads fiction, that it's nonfiction. It's a rare book, it's a special book, and you should definitely read it because it's a very, very comprehensive exploration of great white sharks and how, the shark and human interaction happens. It's as I think Rajshekhar has said multiple times, right, that it's also a love story. It's also a book of energy. It's a book of deep oceans, of lands across the globe, and how our perceptions and history and culture all interweave with these creatures. Humans and sharks have had a long history of encounters. Sharks have been seen as predators. And this book, Iridescent Skin, which is a multi-species journey of white sharks and caged humans, is the one that captures it splendidly. So anybody who's, enthusiastic about marine life, enthusiastic about climate, conservation, loves animals, or just wants to read something that gives them a new perspective on life, like for me it did. I hadn't for instance, encountered anything about the Sundarbans since I last read The Hungry Tide, as I was saying. This is a fabulous book. The book is available on Amazon, Flipkart, on Yogi Books website. Please do order your copy. Also, Raj Shekhar's website will be in the bio of the podcast episode. So do go check out his other work and do let us know how you like this podcast as well. Raj Shekhar, thank you so much for taking our time to do this with us. It's been a pleasure and a privilege. Learned a lot from the book and from you. And I hope that more and more people read it and similarly discover great things.
I just want to add, you know, I'm really open to talk to anyone who wants to talk about this, you know, and take our discourse forward. At the end of the day, we all have to work together, you know, to make this a reality. So I'm looking forward to that interaction.
Thank you so much and wish you all the best, Raj Shekhar.
Thank you. Thank you.
Did you like this episode? Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram, where we are available as India Book Podcast. Also, if you'd like to recommend changes that we should make to the show or some author that we should definitely have, feel free to leave us feedback, recommendations, etc. on indiabookpodcast@gmail.com. If you love listening to the show, do not forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcast fix from.